Are we good now? There we go. Good. I figured I got to up my game this morning on knowing that was going to be the piece of communication this morning that was going to happen. I've got a whiteboard here this morning, so I'm going to use a whiteboard a little later in my sermon. The message is the same. We're talking about a story this morning. We're continuing with the story of David. And this morning's story brings us to, as we look at chapter 9 of 2 Samuel, and if you have a Bible, you can open it up and check it out there. I'm going to read this story. It's going to be up on the screen as well. But it's really David taking the inordinate amount of power that he had and using it to help others. I want to mention, too, just before that, Veronica is taking juice boxes, and all of us can do that, and it's an incredible thing, and working alongside of her grandpa. How cool is that? And using that to mobilize others and bring others into the cause. And we want to give you an opportunity to do that. And as Kevin said, the ministry that it comes out of is Hope Haven Canada. So if you want to write a check or give cash, you can do that in the box and we'll make sure it gets put out there that way. The ATM machine, that one goes towards Coast Hill. So just so you know, and we don't get the two funds kind of mixed up. But if you want to designate it, do cash or a check, you can do that to Hope Haven through this. Or you can go on their website and use that. We are given an inordinate amount of resources and opportunity and really power within the society that we live in. And good for Veronica to take that opportunity at her age already to start leveraging that for the benefit of others, for the good of others. And in the story this morning, we have David doing that for the person of Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth. You can see it up there on the screen. Can you see it up on the screen? Maybe backtrack. I want you to turn to your neighbor and say the word. We just need to practice this word, Mephibosheth. Okay. It kind of gets you tied up a little bit, but it's an obscure story, but maybe forever from now on, you'll remember Mephibosheth. We might call him Mephi for short here this morning. It says in verse 1 of chapter 9, it says, "One day David asked, 'Is anyone in Saul's family still alive? Anyone to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?' He summoned a man named Ziba, who had been one of Saul's servants. 'Are you Ziba?' the king asked. 'Yes, sir, I am,' Ziba replied. The king then asked him, 'Is anyone still alive from Saul's family? If so, I want to show God's kindness to them.' And Ziba replied, 'Yes, one of Jonathan's sons is still alive. He is crippled in both feet.' 'Where is he?' the king asked. 'In Lodabar,' Ziba told him, 'at the home of Machir, son of Amiel.' So David sent for him and brought him from Machir's home. His name was Mephibosheth. He was Jonathan's son and Saul's grandson. When he came to David, he bowed low to the ground in deep respect. David said, 'Greetings, Mephibosheth.' Mephibosheth replied, 'I am your servant.' 'Don't be afraid,' David said. 'I intend to show kindness to you because of my promise to your father Jonathan. I will give you all the property that once belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will be able to eat here with me at the king's table.' Mephibosheth bowed respectfully and exclaimed, 'Who is your servant that you should show such kindness to a dead dog like me?' Then the king summoned Saul's servant Ziba and said, 'I have given your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons and servants are to farm the land for him to produce food for your master's household. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, will eat here at my table.' Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. And Ziba replied, 'Yes, my lord the king, I am your servant, and I will do all that you have commanded.' And from that time on, Mephibosheth ate regularly at David's table, like one of the king's own sons. Mephibosheth had a young son named Micah, and from then on, all the members of Ziba's household were Mephibosheth's servants. And Mephibosheth, who was crippled in both feet, lived in Jerusalem and ate regularly at the king's table." Powerful story. Incredible story of David reaching out to a man who, in that society, in that time, would have been incredibly bad. Hard up in terms of his fortune. David taking power, the power that he had, and bringing that to Mephibosheth. I want to backtrack a little bit this morning just to kind of share with you the circumstances that started this whole deal. And we'll look at Mephibosheth part 1, which is found in 2 Samuel 4. And the story is there. that Mephibosheth was crippled as a child. Now, what had happened was Saul and Jonathan, Saul being the king at the time, Jonathan being his son, were killed out in battle. And Carl covered that story a few weeks ago for us here. David was still kind of on the run from Saul at the time. But as soon as the Philistines took out Saul and Jonathan, the household of Saul and Jonathan, with Mephibosheth being one of those descendants, would have been terrified. Now, back then, the Philistines were about the worst conquering army you can ever imagine, the most brutal, the most... They would just destroy anybody connected at all with the former kingship. Mephibosheth would have been a prime target. He was the grandson of Saul. And so in the panic and in the rush to get out of Gibeon, to get out of the palace, Mephibosheth is picked up as a five-year-old. The nurse is running with him, and he's dropped. I can imagine she trips, something happens, and he's dropped. His ankles are broken. And when they get to the place of Lodabar, where they're hiding out on the other side of the Jordan River, his bones never knit together properly. And so forever, he's unable to walk. And we got a little bit of a picture of that this morning, what that can look like. In that day and that time, being disabled meant that you were either seen to be a curse, you were completely marginalized from society, you would have no way of making a living, and there was no social safety net at all. Worse than that, Mephibosheth is also living in fear forever of what might happen to him at the hands of David. And you can imagine, as he's there in Lodabar, he's kind of recounting and rethinking that story again and again. You know, these tragic things, how they can go through your mind again and again. And I can imagine the nurse, you know, saying to him, well, you know what? If it wasn't for David, if it wasn't for all that happened in this, somehow David would have been seen as the villain. Somehow or another, David, you know, if all of this wouldn't have happened, I mean, they were running for their lives too. If it wasn't for the Philistines taking them over, it would be just as much David. And you remember, he had his own army. So while Mephibosheth is growing up over in Lodabar, David is getting stronger and stronger. Kevin talked about that last week. He had kind of set up his kingship. He had united the tribes. He had, you know, made up the boundaries. And it says he started to rule with justice and equity and fairness. And as David's doing that over there, you can imagine Mephibosheth is on the other side of the Jordan River. It's like he crossed over to another land, and he's hiding out in a place called Lodabar. Now, in the Bible, there's incredible significance put into names. And the name Lodabar literally means no name. It also can be translated as no pasture. Now, you can imagine for a society like that who makes their living off of the land, to have no pasture meant that this is just a horrible place. Like, I don't know what the equivalent would be today, but it would be maybe beyond hope to Spuzzum somewhere out there or something like that. I don't know. I hope there's nobody here from Spuzzum. But it's out there. It's in no man's land, and it's got nothing going for it. And that's perfect for Mephibosheth, who's living as a victim through no fault of his own. He's living this life that's just desolate. It's got no pasture. It's got nothing. The name Mephibosheth means seething dishonor. I wonder what that means. Could it be that Mephibosheth is growing up just seething? You know what? If it wasn't for that stinking King David, I'd be, you know, I was next in line. I'd be the next king. If it wasn't for all the calamity that's happened to us, I'd be over there on that palace that he's building over in Jerusalem. And so Mephibosheth grows up with this kind of mindset, and it kind of begs the question, how will he respond to David? What would happen there? And then we jump over to chapter 9, and here we have the story in chapter 9 that I just read, where David comes into power, and he goes, how can I show kindness? We talked last week, Kevin talked about this prayer of thanksgiving where King David in chapter 7 is saying, oh God, oh sovereign Lord, what is my family that you have brought me this far? And sovereign Lord, in addition to everything else, you speak of giving your servant a lasting dynasty. Do you deal with everyone this way, O sovereign Lord? David's just living with this incredible grace, this incredible love from God. And it has an impact on his heart. And he starts to say, you know, what can I do? And beyond that, he goes, you know, I made a promise to my friend Jonathan that I would look after him. We had this covenant kind of bond, this promise. And David could have easily forgotten about that promise. He could have easily just left that behind and whatever. This is good. Life is good. I'm doing well. But he goes, I need to reach out on myself. And so he sends for Mephibosheth. And they look all over for him. He tracks down Ziba, a former servant of Saul. And he says, Ziba, where do I find him? And he sends out his men, and they find him in Lodabar, in this hidden little place. Now you can imagine when David's men come for Mephibosheth. Now what's he thinking? Okay, he's put on a donkey. He's being brought to Jerusalem. I can imagine he's thinking, my miserable life is about to end, you know, very quickly here. I hope it doesn't end too painfully. That would have been what was going on in his mind. And we see that very specifically as he comes into contact with David. But we find out that David has nothing but good for him, nothing but blessing for him. And we get that right off the start when we see him call him by his name. David goes, Mephibosheth. And very intentionally in this narrative, we have his name being used seven times. It's like, you've been a no-name in a no-name place, and I'm giving you an identity. I'm reaching out to you as a person. And you can imagine Mephibosheth, his mindset would have been eyes down. You know, never look at somebody in the eyes. He's looking at him, and he responds, I'm just a dead dog. What do you care about somebody like me? And David reaches out to him. He comes out with this kind of personal kind of love. And, you know, really in our lives, we can talk about kind of general love, loving, you know, everybody out there kind of thing, the right kind of Christian thing to do. But you can only really love one person at a time. And that takes putting a name to them. And David does that. Love gives you a name. You also see David here giving him the respect and saying, you know what, you don't have to be afraid. One of the first things we see in verse 7 is him saying, there is nothing but love here. Don't be afraid. Mephibosheth would have been terrified, as I said, but David's saying, you know, the promise I made to your father, that binds me from any revenge. There's nothing but forgiveness and grace here. Most of kings in that day would have acted out of power. They would have just, like, let's destroy anything. That would have been very typical of that day to kind of take that kind of action. But instead, what does David do? He puts his love into action. It's an incredible thing in verse 9 when he says, you know what, all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, I'm giving that to you. And in fact, I'm going to give you his servant, his 15 sons, that's a lot of sons, 20 servants, and they're going to actually be your workers. So he's not just kind of saying, okay, you got, now figure it out. He's actually saying, I'm setting you up with a corporation. I'm setting you up with a livelihood. You're no longer going to be a victim kind of begging. You're going to have this whole group working for you. What an incredible thing. You know, there's people that have talked about, and there's this book out called When Helping Hurts, and it's when you kind of do hands outs, but you don't really empower the person. David was like right there saying, I'm going to empower you with that action, by giving him that kind of wealth. But what I find so cool in this story, too, is that he doesn't just give him his wealth and say, okay, now get out of here and I'll go. He actually says, I want to be in relationship with you. And he gives him a place at his table. And he says, from that time on, he's treated like one of his sons. Like, that's an incredible elevation when you think about that. You can imagine them having the table, and here's Mephibosheth, and they wouldn't have had wheelchairs back then, I don't imagine. Maybe some sort of primitive form, but here he is kind of dragging himself along, right, by his arms, by his hands, and then being, you know, kind of climbing up next to the table. You can imagine the picture, right? I mean, in those days, kings didn't associate with weakness. How easy is it for us to kind of say, let's keep weakness just a little bit away from us, right? But David's going, every day, you're in relationship with me. It's a powerful picture. It's a powerful picture of the use of power, of being able to kind of take it and say, how will I use this? How will I take my authority and use it for the flourishing of others? I heard a talk this summer that was incredibly inspiring, and his name was Andy Crouch, was the name of the guy, not to be confused with the old 70s musician Andre Crouch. But his name is Andy Crouch. He's executive editor for Christianity Today and a very bright fellow. But he talked about the whole interplay of power and love, authority and vulnerability. And he mapped this out. I'm going to try and do this the best I can, knowing that it may not be easily seen here. But he takes authority, if you put this on a graph, and he puts that on a continuous line that way, from low authority, no authority, to some authority. And then take it across over here and put the word vulnerability here. Vulnerability. Ability. There we go. So put vulnerability along there, and you go from, you know, low vulnerability to high vulnerability. And all of us have a level of, I mean, as human beings, we're created in the image of God. We're created in the image of God, and the idea behind it is all of us are given some authority as human beings. When you think of Adam and Eve in the garden, God said, I want to give you the power to name the animals. I want to give you the ability to have dominion over the earth, to rule over. There's an incredible amount of power given to each of us as human beings. And the idea of authority would grab hold of that power that is given to them by God. And so he says, you know, on that scale, we have different people who take power and authority and use it in different ways, authority and vulnerability. In order to really use our authority, we have to be willing to be vulnerable as well. So many people take high authority and they live up here, okay, so high A, and this is, so that's way up there, and low vulnerability. And they say, you know what, I'm going to use all my power to make sure that I am taken care of so that I, you know, cover all my bases, and I will take my wealth and my relationships, and I'm going to make sure that I'm never vulnerable. I'm going to live right over here. And in that day, that would have been the kings. Kings did that. They had the right to be able to do that. And everybody else, well, you can take care of yourself. We look at it in the world today, you look at bad leadership, wherever that happens, it's when people go, okay, we're going to use this all for ourselves. So take all the wealth and all the power and use it for myself. So we got power and relationship here. You take the inverse of that and you go high vulnerability, low authority, and you have injustice. You have poverty. You have people with no means. We got a little bit of a picture of that with people in Guatemala. I'll never forget the time when I was in Dominican Republic. And we were working in a city just outside of the main city, and it was actually a suburb that was built on the garbage dump. And there was all these people who had kind of put together a community, massive, thousands, hundreds of thousands actually living there. And we were working with a Christian organization that had built a school, who were helping to educate these people and give them a new life. They also had a hospital. I'll never forget walking through the hospital as we were given a tour, and there was one of the most heart-wrenching pictures you can imagine of this little baby who had just been brought in the day before. And unfortunately, and so many people are pushed into this incredible victimization and poverty. This woman who had been a prostitute, only able to make finding that that was the only way she could make a living, and living drug addicted, had a baby and was just completely neglected. And this baby was there, and it's quite shocking when you see it with a bloated belly and tiny little skinny arms and legs. It's an image you can never get out of your minds when you see the victimization that can happen. And what we have in the story of this story is this is where Mephibosheth lived. I'll just put Mephi for short there. But when people have no authority and high vulnerability, that's when you have injustice. What the opportunity is, and what David took the opportunity to do, is take his high authority and move into high vulnerability. Many kings wouldn't do that. They wouldn't bring somebody who could potentially be an heir, somebody who could potentially be a threat, and bring them to their table, offer them wealth and relationships. This is the picture that we have of David here, is going out of his way to do that. Say, you know what, I'm willing to move from this to over here. Very few kings would do that, and yet he does that. You might wonder, what's in this block? Andy Crouch didn't really know. What would you do on low vulnerability, low authority? He says that's a little bit like being on a luxury cruise. You know, when you go on a cruise ship, you've got low authority, you've got low vulnerability. You just kind of cruise along. I mean, it might be nice for a while, but it's not really where you want to live. High authority, high vulnerability. That's what David did in that case. The story continues, and we have Mephibosheth part 3. And chapter 16 and 19, it's a fascinating kind of story, and I think we're going to touch on it very briefly here in the interest of time. But what happens was David continues to gain in his kingship. We're going to cover these stories in the next couple of weeks. David makes some very bad decisions as a husband and as a father, and decisions that came out of living in this zone. David is a mirror oftentimes. He's not just a model. He made some huge errors, lived over in this area. His kingship started to divide, and his son Absalom rises up. His son Absalom is kind of like the golden child, and he sets himself up as the ultimate king. He gets himself a following. He says, you know what, we're just going to worship you, Absalom. He uses his wealth and his relationships to divide the kingdom, and he develops an army. And eventually that army comes along, and there's a coup, and they're about to move into Jerusalem and take over Jerusalem and take over the throne. His own son is doing that to David. And as David hears word of it, he says, you know what, I got to get out of Jerusalem. So he flees for his life with his kind of family, with the court. And they get to the other side of the Mount of Olives. And in chapter 16, verse 1, we find Ziba, the servant of Saul, coming alongside and bringing him a whole bunch of good things, like 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, and a whole bunch of provisions for David as David moves back out into the wilderness. You can imagine. He's gone from this place to down here. This is where David finds himself. He doesn't know what's going to happen. There's some people that are still loyal to him. He still has an army. And as Ziba is giving him all these goods, David asks him in verse 3, where's Mephibosheth? Why isn't he with me? And Ziba replies, verse 3, he said, today, he's quoting Mephibosheth, I will get back the kingdom of my grandfather Saul. Ouch. Can you imagine? Here's David being betrayed by his son Absalom, and he finds out this guy Mephibosheth that I brought up is now going to wait for me, and maybe in the chaos I'm going to get the kingdom back. That would have been a very painful moment for David. Well, David heads out. Kind of a knee-jerk reaction, David says to him, well, then, you know, Ziba, you can have everything Mephibosheth owns. That's kind of his parting word. I guess if, you know, no good turn, you know, gets unpunished kind of thing. And so he gives it over to Ziba. David lives out in the wilderness for a while. His men kind of fight back, and eventually the throne is returned back to David. Absalom is beaten. David starts heading back to Jerusalem. And the story picks up again in chapter 19, verse 24, when it says, now Mephibosheth, Saul's grandson, came down from Jerusalem to meet the king. He had not cared for his feet, trimmed his beard, or washed his clothes since the day the king left Jerusalem. Obvious question for King David to ask now, why didn't you come with me, Mephibosheth? Mephibosheth replied, my lord the king, my servant Ziba deceived me. I told him, sell my donkey so I can go with the king, for as you know, I am crippled. Saying, I'm vulnerable. There's nothing I could have done in that situation. Ziba left me. Ziba has slandered me by saying that I refuse to come, but I know that my lord the king is like an angel of God, so do what you think is best. All my relatives and I could expect only death from you, my lord. He's saying, I'm completely vulnerable to you. But instead, you have honored me by allowing me to eat at your own table. What more can I ask? You've said enough, David replied. I've decided that you and Ziba will divide your land equally between you. Give him all of it, Mephibosheth says. I'm content just to have you safely back again, my lord the king. It's an interesting reaction that David has. Here's Mephibosheth saying, no, Ziba was telling a lie. There was nothing I could do. I couldn't get on the donkey. I couldn't come with you. And it seems by his appearance that Mephibosheth is telling the truth. But the story doesn't really tell you. It doesn't really tell you whether it was Mephibosheth or Ziba. Interesting thing that David does. He says, you know what? I'm not going to bring out witnesses. I'm not going to try and, you know, resolve this. You just divide the land. We'll take care of it. Interesting. In some ways, David even makes himself more vulnerable. In some ways, he's going, you know what? There might be a traitor here, but it's okay. And he goes on. It's a very fascinating kind of end to the story. And, you know, every story in the Old Testament is an interesting kind of, it's always a small story within a big story. whenever we read Old Testament stories, I think we have to look at it and go, how does this story play out in the big story of what God is doing in the Bible? Ultimately, the high point of the Bible is when Jesus comes along. And what we have in this story is Jesus with all authority, with all power, comes as the ultimate king and makes himself vulnerable for us. He comes and lives over here. It's a powerful picture. Ultimately, the picture of David and Mephibosheth is the story of Jesus coming to us. Coming to us who are living down here in Lodabar. What we have with Mephibosheth is really, it's me. It's you. It's all of us together. It's God coming out of his glory and his power and saying, I'm not just going to stay removed and distant from you, but I'm actually going to come close to you. I'm going to make myself vulnerable. And what we have in the incarnation, in the story, in God coming to us and Jesus is saying, you know what, I'm going to make myself absolutely vulnerable as a baby. There's nothing more vulnerable as a little baby. And he comes and he says, you know what, I want to know your name. So I'm coming as a human to live among you so that I can know your name, so I can love you individually. And I'm going to come and I'm going to reach out and use my power to love. And what we have again and again in the story of the incarnation is that kind of authority and that kind of power, when it came close to people, when it came close to Mary, you know, the Virgin Mary, when Gabriel showed up to say, you're going to be with child, what's the thing that Gabriel says to him? Don't be afraid. Same thing David says to Mephibosheth. Whenever we're faced with that kind of authority and that kind of power, and even just an angel showing up, never mind God himself, people were afraid. Angels were up in heaven speaking to the shepherds. They say, don't be afraid. Goodwill to all people. God is making himself vulnerable for you so that you and me can be given authority with him. It's a powerful picture. And the story would have been known by the descendants of David and the people of Israel. It's a powerful thing when you look at the story in the Gospels of Jesus walking down the street. And there's this beggar, this person with high vulnerability, low authority, Bartimaeus, blind Bartimaeus. He's on the side of the street. He's begging. No one should be begging. He's blind. He has a disability, so he can't do anything but that. And what you have coming from Bartimaeus' lips is, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. They would have known that story. They would have shared that story of Mephibosheth. He would have known, okay, this is the kind of king that we have who doesn't stay distant but uses his power and authority to move close to us, to love us. And really, true love always makes itself vulnerable. True love always has vulnerability attached. True love always takes risks. David took a big risk on Mephibosheth. Would he turn back against him, as Ziba kind of claimed he would? When Jesus did on the cross is come close to us, he took action to die for us, to take upon himself our sin, to make himself absolutely vulnerable, because here we are, apart from him, living with no name, with nothing, in our humanity, in our fallenness, in our brokenness, and he's saying, I want to bring you up. I want to restore to you the God image in your own personal spiritual life. How do I respond to a love of a king like that? That's really one of the great questions that each of us has to answer. A king who would come and make himself vulnerable to raise us up, to give us a power, to empower us with authority to take that kind of love and to bring it towards others. David's prayer a couple chapters before is, oh, sovereign Lord, well, who am I? And as we come to him, recognizing our injustice, recognizing our own sense towards that, our own poverty of spirit, he raises us up here. And what it takes really for each of us is to recognize that this is me. This is where I live. Many of us would rather kind of give ourselves that kind of the sense that, you know what, I'm okay by myself. But we're never without vulnerability. We're mortal. We can't possibly live as kings. It's an illusion to think that we can live over there. But Jesus is coming to us and saying, I'm going to bring you here. We have that ultimate kingship of Jesus. Something changes in our hearts when we realize that. And we say, you know what, God, I want to have your love. I receive the gift that you gave. I recognize your vulnerability in coming to me. I need that. I need to be empowered. I need that power over sin and death. The second question that we have is, will I model myself after David and ultimately after Jesus? Because David did it so human, so badly in some ways, but will I take the power given to me by Jesus to risk being vulnerable and to love like Jesus? You know, there's a sense of which we can do that globally, and that's a powerful thing. What Veronica is doing, and that's part of the, that is a significant part of the picture. I think it's so cool that she was able to go over there and not just kind of send some wealth over, but actually come in relationship with a person like that little girl, Yemma. But it's also for us here today and for us in our personal relationships with others. Will we reach out to others around us? Will we be willing to make ourselves vulnerable even through the giving and generosity towards others? There's a wealth aspect to it that we saw in David. There's also that relational aspect. Would I be willing to go and reach out to others who maybe I'm taking a risk with? It might make me vulnerable to move towards them. But that's what God has done for me. And I will use whatever I can, my empowerment, my gifts, my resourcing, for the flourishing of others. What's so cool about it is the way God created this whole thing to work is it's not, power isn't a zero-sum game. It isn't like if I give away power, I'll have less for myself. It's actually something that as we give away, more power is created. That's how God created it from the beginning. That's how it was. And that's the opportunity we get to do and to be about in our relationships with others. I want to close with prayer. And I'll invite you to stand, would you, with me? God, I just want to thank you that your heart is for flourishing, that your heart is for the betterment of others, whatever place we might find ourselves in. And Lord, I just want to thank you that you raise us up from being victims to empower us, to give us what we need in our spirits, in our souls, in our lives. I thank you for the picture that we get of that in the story with Mephibosheth. And Lord, I just want to thank you that you're the ultimate king who moved from authority to vulnerability for our sake so that we can raise up others around us as well and be raised up ourselves. I pray that this week as we go from here, we would take the whatever you've given us relationally, materially, that we would leverage that for the benefit of others. That we would look for those who may be vulnerable. It might be in relationships. It might be physically. Whatever it is, God, I pray that you would draw us towards that. In your name, amen.